This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us...
John Walden.
Iona Hegarty.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now John, we're talking about health and health reforms and so on, but in the proposed reforms, is the idea of it, is it a separate Maori health authority? Or?
No, well, it's not separate. It's still part of government. It's still accountable as all the... organisations that work within government, they'll be accountable to the Ministry of Health and the Minister. A lot of the services that are currently provided by the Ministry or overseen by the Ministry will be devolved. So a lot of the attention has been around the amalgamation of the 20 DHBs into four regional authorities, and they're going to call that Health New Zealand. And then what is going to be established is a Māori commissioning agency and a public health agency. But also sitting in the background is the Cancer Authority as well, which is already established. Yeah. That's led by Diana Sarfati. That's part of the Ministry of Health at the moment. So, you know, there are the main thing driving these reforms are to make a national health service in response to Heather Simpson's review of the health sector that was done 2 years ago. And part of the reason, rationale behind having a Māori agency is quite contested because there was a minority review in Heather Simpson's report that did not agree with the findings of the recommendations that the committee made, because some members of the review wanted a much more autonomy for this new Māori Health Service.
So the proposals fit within the recommendations, or were they separate?
I think so. The only thing that I think that went beyond the recommendations of the review were disestablishing all the district health boards, and creating these new four regional areas, and planning for that's underway at the moment. And I'm not sure what's happening.
Okay,
there.
And the Maori one, you said it's a commissioning agency. So is that different from a delivery agency?
There will be some aspects of delivery, but before you deliver a service, you have to describe what it looks like, and then find people to contract to do it.
So there's an aim to develop a sort of parallel set of services for Maori?
No. These will be new services. These are areas where the commissioning that's either done by the district health boards or the Ministry of Health, or directly from the ministry, are not achieving what they are intended.
So the Maori will be using the normal services that everyone else is using, but there's something else coming through this? Is that what you're saying?
Well, if you think of it like our electoral system, a Maori can either be on the general roll or the Maori electoral roll. I mean, you still get one vote. It's just that we then, if you're on the Maori roll, you vote for the candidates who are sitting in the Maori seats. Mason Drury is working on the detail of what this commissioning agency will look like, but in past we've had a similar organisation. There were two. There was Raukura Hauora that commissioned public health services from the Waikato in the early 90s or mid 90s, and that was very successful. And then there was Te Hauora Te Tai Tukurau up north, where they held the budgets for the provision of public health services, and they commissioned providers to provide these public health services, and that was very successful. That ran for 5 years. Eventually, unfortunately, the organisation failed through, I think, the chief executive not doing their job properly.
Yeah.
And so what happened, and I think the good thing for this, which hasn't happened anywhere in health, is that the contracts for provision were then devolved to the organisation, so they then operated independently. Okay. Still funded from Vote Health, but instead of being funded through the commissioning agency. But you know, that's unlikely to happen again.
So so you'd be setting up things that are providing, what, primary health care to Maori, and then they'd be using the hospitals for
well, no, I don't. I think they will fit in where areas of need are not met at the moment. For example, the delivery of primary health care through a Māori organisation. There are very, very few organisations that do that at the moment. Te Raukura, Hauora in the Waikato is one of them, yeah. And there's some up north. You know, they make the news often because they are the exception rather than the rule. I think the intention is to make the access to these types of services more available. Now, they won't be soldiers for Māori. Half the people who use these current services at the moment are not Māori. They tend to be in communities where there's what we call unacceptably high levels of deprivation. And so you really do need a good safety net for these communities. And I think the advantage of providing or setting up a Māori commissioning agency, I think, encumbers the whole sector to be more responsive to the needs of their patients rather than just assume that... the service should best be delivered in a manner that's medically driven.
So it's a different style of delivery?
Yes.
In what way would it be different?
Well, in the same way that a tangi is different from a funeral. A tangi is celebrating a person's life, and it's a way of socialising grief and reconnecting with people, you know, you choose to be with. And a funeral is much the same, but they are done in different ways, but they achieve the same ends and meet the expectations of those people who attend. And, you know, it's just really unfortunate that we've seen health as something that should be delivered in hospitals, which has really alienated the preventive end of health and medicine from the major work of the DHBs. Most of the legislated public health requirements are still directly delivered or commissioned by the Ministry of Health, and although they're hosted by the DHBs, they're accountable to the Ministry of Health. So there are, you know, still some things that have really I think hindered the connection between primary health care and preventive medicine.
So there's the idea you go through some reforms that reduce the degree of fragmentation with all the district health boards and then increase the fragmentation in this other dimension?
No, because the provision of these new services fit across the way that Māori organise rather than the current DHBs. For example, the iwi around here... Whakapapa south into Wellington, north into the Rangitike, west into Whanganui, and east over into the Hawke's Bay. But you've got four district health boards involved there. So in order for those district health boards to devise services to meet the needs of those Māori communities, you've got to reconcile the different ways four district health boards have it, conceptualising the problem and then finding providers to do it.
So one way would suit all the different iwi?
Well, I think it's then they can get together and start to address their needs.
Dispute among themselves as to which...
No, it doesn't work like that. No. For example, if we take a parallel issue, and that's local representation in the Manawatu District Council. The Manawatu District Council decided last week to delay making a decision on the establishment of Māori wards. Because they were fearful that their work program was too full to do it in the next year before the election, and that iwi were too busy. But I think iwi disproved that in their response to this at the meeting and subsequently yesterday with the hikoi that was led by Mehana Jury, to say that, no, this is a really important issue and it's something that Māori would like to see addressed. So it was really disappointing that those people who actually made the decisions for Māori decided to abrogate their responsibility to whoever is going to be around in 2024. And in many ways, a lot of decisions around Māori health have been managed that way. We see no performance or expectation around Māori changes in Māori health status simply because it's monitored, but there's no way of actually saying that these things should be improved. But if you go to cancer waiting times, there's lots of political activity around that, you know, from Tony Ryle coming, you know, even if you just look back 6 years, you know, Tony Ryle made quite an effort to change that. So there are some things, and I hate to say that they're largely politically driven, but I think these are the people who sign off those decisions.
Political areas, they're all going to be politically driven.
They are and they aren't, because, you know, in many ways the performance of the sector is an operational issue. But those outputs in terms of looking to change outcomes are differential.
Well, it's governance as opposed to the... Governance is more political.
Well, governance is a different issue. You know, at the moment we have 20 forms of that in terms of health, and they oversee the performance of the chief executive because they monitor the performance of the chief executive. However, they have little leverage other than to look at the financial performance, simply because the outcomes at the moment are, until recently, poorly framed, and we had very little data to look at, even cross-sectional data to look at Māori health, let alone longitudinal data.
But we said, wasn't that the fundamental problem with public health, that to measure the outcomes of the public health activities, you really don't get that information?
Yeah, well, I think the focus was more on the structure and the organisation of services rather than on what they achieved. It was more to do with...
Because they were measurable and you could get indicators and they needed indicators.
No, I think it was they were familiar.
Yeah. Making the comparison about the ward system.
Yeah.
I felt that actually that was a very token thing to just have one Māori ward, one representative, when there was 12 Marae involved. And I personally... would have thought that a much better system would be to set up a separate committee which included all 12 Māori marais, local marais, and that having them look at all the decisions that come out of council, be on an equal level, because that's what partnership is supposed to be about. But I would also like it that the Māori ward committee of 12 would then be looking at all decisions, but having the view of cultural, environmental, and all the well-beings that are spiritual, mental health, and all those well-beings that are really important to Māori. And that is actually what I would prefer to see is coming out of the new health system, that we are actually saying... The health system, as we've had before, has been too narrow for Māori. But we need these other concepts. We need to be looking at the whole the whole thing about what it is to be Tainata Whenua.
You know, I agree with you, Ryla. The reforms in both local body politics and in health are around changes in governance, okay? But they're more of a hybrid of that than we have currently with district health boards, because district health boards were there with the sole governance function, whereas these new regional authorities will have some operational responsibilities as well. Where that's delineated is unclear at the moment. But if you talk about the various aspects that contribute to well-being other than just the absence of illness, you know, even if that be mental illness, Mason Jury, gave a really important lecture to the clinicians here at Palmerston North Hospital many, many years ago, and he wrote a paper from that, and it was published in Social Science and Medicine. and it identified, you know, the four aspects of health important to Māori. That was taha wairua, tahu whānau, tahu tinana, and tahu heninaro. So that's in reverse order: mental health, physical health, which we're familiar with in medicine, but also the health of the whānau and spirituality. And these, he said, are a bit like a house, in that for in order for a house to stand, things have to be in balance and mutually supporting. And Tai Tukurau, people in Tai Tukurau, I think Māori Ewa Glove had said that, but it's, well, the whenua is also important. And for not only its metaphorical meanings, but also those that form very important aspects of Māori identity, but also the place of the whenua, both in terms of sustaining us, but as also our origins are in the whenua as well. So these were new ways of looking at health, and it's taken a long time to inculcate these into medicine, because we privilege medicine in many ways. Medicine offers answers to often acute and sometimes life-threatening conditions, which is why hospitals are important. If you are sick, you need to know where to go and that it's going to work. And that works, you know, that works pretty well in New Zealand, and I think we've put a great deal of pressure on the health system to do that, and at the moment it is still under a great deal of pressure. However, to then have a reform process to help improve that health system and put all of these new ways of looking at health into it, we've been trying to do that for a long time and have largely been unsuccessful. However, I must mihi to Grant Cameron, who's the president of the Paediatric Society. We had a Paediatric Society Zoom teleconference yesterday morning. He not only performed a karakia very well, he then sang his own waiata, and I think that was very, very diligent of him to do that. So now people are making an effort, but I think the value in a Māori health agency is that becomes the focus rather than an addendum. It becomes a necessary thing rather than a nice to have. I think it would be nice at some stage in the future to think of Māori approaches to health, even if we just focus on medicine, but in wider public health terms, are as important to the health sector today. In the future, as antibiotics are today, and that we will always have to keep working on them to use them well and use them effectively, knowing that if we don't, they will lose their efficacy. Why is Māori health important? Well, I think in many ways it gives us insight into where the sector doesn't work particularly well. It provides a different cultural lens on to look at ourselves and look at our responsive to health, especially public health terms. Also, it then provides a license to actually look at the needs of other people as well. But I think, like a body politics, I think the premise has to be on this notion of partnership, and that partnership is not something that you... it's less like a shotgun marriage and more like a willing journey, you know, through life. If you use a marriage as I think was the metaphor often used when the Treaty of Waitangi was originally discussed.
So you want to bring a different dimension really into the way health services generally are delivered in New Zealand, you think?
Mm. Well, provide people with Māori with the option, but also other people want to use those services as well. And that's for a multitude of reasons. There are many barriers to health, and what we talked about yesterday was just the cost of using health services that's associated with just access, and then them doing the follow-up visits and buying the necessary pharmaceuticals as well, and rehabilitation afterwards. If we're going to go to a national system, people are going to have to travel to get their health services and then rehabilitate at home, and that's going to require more costs. And so if you cannot afford to do that, and other things like eating and putting a roof over your head are as high a priority, your health then suffers because of that. And that investment that society puts into you to provide these health services for you or for your mum or for your children are not being well used.
So it's really an income thing rather than a cultural thing?
No, I think it's just the pressure that people have on, you know, people have in their lives. For some, income is one measure of what we call, I think we call deprivation, and that it's an indicator. However, it's not the sole one. A modest income in Palmerston North is insufficient in Auckland. If you are living same circumstances, so you know you then have to look at those other things that contribute to deprivation as well, or to the pressures of your own life. For example, if you are a couple working together raising four children, that creates pressures on you. But if that couple then splits up and recombines with other people, you've then got multiple households in which to spread your resources over. So puts more pressure on a person's life and changes the environment in which those children are raised as well. And these are all about just decisions that adults make, let alone respecting the autonomy of children. So, you know, if we just go back to how can we improve our health system, well, I think we have to look at it in a different way and respond to the recommendations that Heather Simpson made.
There's some concern about the numbers not matching the rollout of COVID, say, for example, in Auckland and other areas of New Zealand, which appear to be falling behind. And I understood it was because of
You mean the vaccine rollout?
Vaccine rollout.
Okay. Well, I don't know about that, but given I have evaluated vaccination programs in the past, you're held ransom to the data available, and it always takes time. And wherever you have to rely on a paper-based system, if your computer-based system is not available, means that there is some delay before you can actually record things. So it's often easier to record vaccination doses going out rather than who got it and when they got it. Yeah. But I think it will resolve itself. But look, vaccination, there's an opportunistic part to vaccination where, particularly with this vaccine, you need to take more vaccine than you need, otherwise you upset people. You know, they turn up for an appointment and you say, oh, we've run out of vaccine. That's not going to be a good look. So you always have extra vaccine, and because of this type of vaccine we're using at the moment, you need to have access to other people who you can call upon at short notice. So they tend to be people who are familiar with the health sector. In terms of the plan, I think the plan is actually very, very complex. It looks really simple with its four stages, but given the opportunism that arises, for example, in rural communities, they're doing whole communities, and they're doing this for a really simple reason. It's more efficient to do a small group of people rather than go back several times. It is very, very difficult to run an immunisation program, especially when you need to do recall and give people a second dose.
Because just communication, some people, if they've got cell phones and so on, communication is easier, otherwise it may not be.
Well, it isn't. In some areas, you know, people, cell phone coverage is spotty at best.
Okay, so that's even worse, but those without phones and so on, there's the problem just in contacting them and knowing who's there.
Well, you know, for just establishing a population register to immunise, you know, we've already identified that people who are here living in New Zealand but may not have authority to live in New Zealand for whatever that means, so-called overstayers, but there are others as well, that we have to ensure that they have access to the vaccine as well. Otherwise, we have a cult population and unprotected populations in New Zealand, which are then a risk for future outbreaks. So, in many ways, decisions that we make about health are an optimised series of decisions, and we make it knowing that there are, or not knowing. Sometimes it's a downside. And in many ways, when this immunisation program was planned, there were decisions made about who the priorities group but enough flexibility to ensure that those that wanted and needed the vaccine got it. what happens then is then some people, the expectations of getting the vaccine, don't get it and then become very upset. And for some of them, you know, they have access to the media, others don't. But there are some people who should be immunised who were simply, through our planning, overlooked. Mm. And I think, you know, that's where, you know, the discretion of the vaccinator is really important, you know, that if you have the vaccine and somebody's in front of you and they want it, give it to them.
Yeah. Well, our whole approach to the COVID outbreak, though, was you sort of learning as you go, because it was almost a one-off. Mm. I mean, there were preparation for pandemic, there had been some planning, but that had been sort of scaled back, I think. But if you try to develop policy and the institutions and the labour force and so on all at the same time, it is difficult. Presumably, the lessons we learn from this and the things that will be put in place would mean for the next pandemic we're far more geared up to address that.
Well, I think the pandemic tested our assumptions in many ways, and things that we thought were gold standard and bulletproof weren't. Mm. And so what we had to do was very, very quickly learn on the job in a number of areas. And these have been, you know, and that's the nice thing about having an opposition in Parliament. They point these things out for you, and you've got to do something about it.
Yeah.
You can't just sweep it under the carpet. Mm. And, you know, that's a healthy thing in New Zealand, you know, that we have an opposition that will test the government, because that's, you know, how we know the system's working. I think The important lesson, I think, from COVID is that we didn't repeat 1917. A colleague of mine, Penny, she went home to a funeral, and they'd buried the person, and they were just talking at the urupa, the graveyard, afterwards. And they were standing on this little hillock in the graveyard, and the younger person asked Penny, "Oh, what's this hill?" And she said, "Oh, there are people buried under here, but they have no headstones, so we don't know who they are." And the person said, "Well, how did that happen?" And I said, "Well, that was the pandemic. That was the flu, the First World War flu epidemic."
Yeah, 1918.
Yeah. And people died so quickly, like they're doing in India, like they did in Europe early on, that they just had to be buried, and we didn't do that again. So, you know, we've learnt something from that. I think the lessons from this is that we can't take our health sector for granted.
Mm.
We can't, and we've got to be able to quickly devolve decision making so that we can keep the system moving. And I think that'll be a challenge for this new system, because it'll be
to devolve decision making, but we've actually aggregated the decision making unit.
Well, that'll be the challenge now, is that it'll have to be devolved from four regions to wherever it's needed.
Okay. Now, another dimension, because you said sort of Maori, so maybe a health delivery for Maori, perhaps you want to be looking at different ways, and we could all learn from those.
Mm.
Does that mean that you would need Maori health staff in those areas to do it in that way, or could Pākehā or migrant doctors from overseas, for example, fulfil those roles?
Well, I think they would have, whoever was practicing for these providers and delivering these services, not only have to be professionally competent, but they have to be comfortable and competent to work in a Māori community. Could be anyone. Could be anyone. But I think the challenge will be is actually recruiting and retaining a workforce that has these competencies, simply because they will be in high demand. The whole sector is always looking out for these people, and it's always been a challenge since I worked at Massey. When we've, with our graduates, they've been in high demand. Also, in terms of
for the Maori,
So
you'd be bringing people from elsewhere. Now, let's say you were on a selection panel, and you got an Indian doctor, a South African doctor, a Philippine nurse, whatever. What would you be looking for to say that they were suitable to deliver health services in the way that you want for this purpose?
Well, I think they'd have to be, you know, from my perspective, you know, they'd have to have a good understanding of public health, you know, because I'd be on a selection panel for a public health focus. They would have to understand the science. They would have to be comfortable working in Māori communities and show some competencies and willingness to do that. But not only that, I'd be interested in what their future professional development plans were, because I know that we've only got them for a short period of time because somebody will offer them more money. Mm. And so I want to know what their ambitions are, so that we can start some succession planning. So if you find somebody you want to keep, you want to find plot a path for them so that you can retain them. So you want to develop them.
I'm not sure how that's really different from appointing anybody for radio. What specific for Mao you say you need something different?
Well, for example, if it was a man, it'd have to be somebody who, if he was at a hui or if a patient asked him, he could karakia and karakia in a manner that was relevant to the patient. When everything was finished and he was ready to discharge the patient, you know, act in a manner that it was consistent with the patient.
So then some cultural knowledge and some of the language.
Well, it's more than just cultural knowledge, you know.
But I mean, as a necessity, that should be there. But
I think so. They have to be comfortable doing that.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.